Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Good morning, dear listeners. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to your Monday. I hope your weekend was good. Mine was particularly interesting, fun, busy, slash amusing, because I had a birthday over the weekend. And when your birthday is on April Fool's Day, I don't know. What does that tell you? I figured when I was born, the doctor said this kid is never going to have a real job. So, but I was thinking about a few people that died before they reached my age. Here's just a short list of them. Chopin, Mozart, Schubert, Beethoven, Keats, Byron, Mahler, Shakespeare, Marlowe, James Joyce, and Alexander the Great. Now, I'm not trying to compare myself to those people. I'm just kind of hoping on a subconscious level you will. And then that's just kind of, I'm trying to get that into your psyche, just trying to get it to creep in, because we're going to have Dr. Linda Mental on in just a minute, and she's going to help me process that thought. And I want to just go to Hebrews 12 to get things started and read verse 2, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I'm just getting so excited about Easter that is coming up, and the whole season of Lent, as we are looking towards the cross and the sacrifice Jesus made and the death he endured for us. So on Resurrection Day, when he walked out of the tomb, we know who we follow and the power that he has and he has given to us. If we turn our life and give it to him, which is I recommend everyone listening to do today. I'm kind of a simple guy. Just repent. All right. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Dr. Linda Mental, we're going to talk about why gender matters in marriage. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Dr. Linda Mental is host of the Dr. Linda Mental Show on weekends here on Faith Radio. Linda, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, having a birthday on April Fool's Day, does that pretty much mean I'm never going to take myself too seriously?
Do you really have a birthday on that day?
Yeah.
Are you just
on
April
Saturday.
Fooling me?
No, it was actually Saturday.
Well, my brother lives in Maine, and he put on Facebook on Saturday that they got 8 to 12 inches of snow. And I actually thought that was an April Fool's Day joke.
And it wasn't, huh?
Goes, no joke.
Oh, funny.
Real deal.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about why genders matter in marriage.
So this is a great little thing to talk about, because do you remember the book years ago that Bill Harley put out called His Needs, Her Needs? Did you ever hear about that book?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, this is a book that a lot of people that are in the Christian faith have read, because it deals with the differences in women and men. And one of the things that he did in that book is he set up a survey. He gave a survey and several results of this survey that has to do with what are the top five needs of women in a relationship, in a marriage, and then what are the top five needs of men. And as you might suspect, the needs were very, very different when he looked at that list.
Yeah, I assume they would be. there's in the article that you wrote, when it talks about gender matters, there was a great illustration of a woman who wanted some time with her husband where he would listen, hold her hand, give her good eye contact. And the guy thought, I know what she needs. It's sex. And this is just
right.
An illustration of how different men and women are.
Yeah, and especially in that area of sexual fulfillment. And actually, that is a big difference when we look at this needs list between women and men. So women typically want to have their emotional needs met in order to feel intimate and close and then are ready for a sexual encounter with their spouse. On the other hand, men feel like if they can have that sexual encounter, that is the way that they feel close, and then they're much more ready to talk or have some other kind of emotional needs met. So we come at this very differently, and if we don't understand each other in that process, we get into a little bit of trouble because we just think, well, he's not interested in my needs. He doesn't know what I need at this point, and the man is feeling the same way. So let's look at those lists because I think it's so telling.
Okay.
If we look at that. So women, number one on women's list is affection and conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not number one. It didn't even make the list for men.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Then the number two was followed by honesty, and then openness, financial support, and finally family commitment.
Slow down,
so
Linda.
Women,
I'm taking notes here. Affection.
Yeah. Write those five down.
Honesty is number
two.
It will
improve your
marriage. Number three?
Honesty, openness, financial support.
Okay.
You got to have a job.
Okay. Financial support. And what's five?
And family commitment.
Family commitment. Okay.
Family commitment.
And this is what women want from men.
Yes, and when they're talking about affection, they did not define affection as attention leading to sex.
Okay.
So that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about intimate time together, talking about your day, your life dreams, goals and things that you want in terms of your couple relationship. So
mm-hmm.
that's what women are saying.
Okay. Now, men are very easily, they feel rejected very easily, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the issue here is that I said that whole business of affection and conversation didn't even make their list. It wasn't even on the list. So you would guess what the number one need for men would be.
I got it.
Yep.
Okay, what's number two?
Sexual fulfillment.
What's number two?
Sexual fulfillment. And that was overwhelmingly popular.
Also?
I just want you to know. Now, the second one really, really surprised me. A need for recreational companionship.
Huh.
I was like,
what does that mean?
Okay. Being able to do stuff together, activities, like recreational stuff, leisure time, doing things.
Okay.
And then third was having an attractive spouse.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of interesting. And then domestic support. And the final one was being admired. So, these are very, very different, aren't they?
Yes, very different. Now, let's back up to recreation. Is that activities that are competitive or non-competitive? Do they want to go biking together or do they want to play tennis against each other?
I think either or.
Okay.
Either or with that, just so you have a partner who's really into that kind of part of your life. And
mm-hmm.
so maybe that relates to the idea of relaxing and, men are, and I don't know that women aren't, but, the idea that we can get out, we can do things together, we can be much more active, share that kind of leisure space and time together. And I think that is very important in relationships when you look at how well couples do. If everybody's off doing their own thing all the time, they're not coupling. So we maybe do have a little bit of a low priority for finding things that we can do together. Mm-hmm. I know when I first married my husband, he's a major soccer lover. He grew up on the mission field. He loves soccer. And being raised and born in Michigan, I didn't even know what soccer was back in the day. I mean, we played football. We played hockey.
Right.
The soccer stuff was not even on the picture. And so when I married him, soccer was so important. He played it in college. He was really into this. So I thought, you know what? I better get to learn this game. I better get to know this. We would go to the Chicago Fire games. He loved it. And it was really important, I think, for him that I had a love for this kind of thing and could share in that kind of recreation and leisure time. So I can see the benefit of doing that because it was something we did together that he enjoyed and I actually learned to enjoy it as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it says domestic support, Lynn, I want to ask you this. You have certain traditions and ways that you like to do stuff around your house. Fair?
Yes.
Okay, so what if your husband comes along and he tries to do some domestic help, but it isn't the kind of help that you like, then what?
Yeah. So it just happened the other day in the kitchen.
Right.
Just happened the other day in the kitchen. He was
trying
to be very helpful.
Uh-huh.
And I was sort of like, I know how to do this. You don't have to tell me how to do this.
Okay.
And he looks at me, puts his hands up, and he goes, hey, I'm just trying to help.
Okay.
And I thought, yes, he is.
So what kind of domestic support can men offer that is going to be welcomed by their wife?
I think a lot of times I love it when he offers to help me clean.
Okay.
And actually, I wrote an article years ago called Men Who Do Housework Actually Have Better Marriages. So, offering to participate in that is a good thing.
Yeah, but your definition of clean and a man's definition of clean is different because all men do is walk around with a bottle of Windex and a rag. That's the extent of their cleaning ability.
Well, actually, I have a husband who had to clean toilets in a big organization when he was in college to get money. So he's actually really good at cleaning. So I would put him on that task in a heartbeat.
Okay, but I'm just saying that could be a source of contention if things aren't cleaned properly.
All of these could be. Okay. Bill, all of these could be. The same thing with helping with the kids. That's a big thing. You know, the minute that, you know, you take the kids for an hour, give you a moment to take a shower, do whatever you need to do, domestic support in that regard is really great. But you're right. All of these things can create conflict. Again, if we don't understand what are our needs and if we're not talking about those needs and understanding the differences here, because I was getting ready to talk about this today when we had that issue in the kitchen, mm-hmm. I thought about this and I thought, ooh, domestic support is trying to be supportive. I need to go, okay, thanks. Hey, yeah. That's great. You can take that dish over there.
Did he feel like he was getting credit for helping or did he feel a little rejected when you said, I got this?
I think he was a little taken aback at first because he thought he was helping me and I wasn't receiving it. So I did have to stop and I did stop, put my stuff down and say, you're right, you were just trying to help and I apologize. I was being a little bit short with that.
Okay. Now,
so you have to look at this stuff and negotiate it as you go.
Yes. Now on the man's list is having an attractive spouse. Fortunately, that's not on the women's list. So when we return, we'll talk about that. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned for more of Dr. Linda Mintel. Be back in a minute. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Good morning, everyone. I'm talking to Dr. Linda Mintel. And Linda, men have heard this before. Don't try to fix it. I just need you to listen.
That's right.
That's kind of the law of the land.
That's right.
And men are fix-it people. We like to fix stuff. That's when we feel
useful. Yeah,
listening
isn't the easiest. Listening isn't the easiest thing to do because you're just sitting there and you're thinking, okay, how do we problem solve this? How do we get to the point?
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem to really understand, and I think this really is a legitimate point, that women have more nerve fibers connecting the verbal and the emotional portions of their brain than do men. So just that fact in terms of the difference in the wiring of the brain means that we love to talk and we like the journey of good conversation and men want to get right to the point. So there's a big brain difference right there where mm-hmm. we want to talk it out, think about it. When Norm and I were first married and I would come home with my day and I would be talking about all the things that happened and I would say, so you tell me what's going on with you. And he goes, really? I just don't even want to relive all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I talk about it? So very different perspective because talking about it helped me. Talking about it for him just made it more stressful because he'd already lived that. He didn't want to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm. So when you try to meet a need and you do have to have a conversation to figure out what is the language that lets you feel loved, appreciated, understood, mm-hmm. and cared for, because certainly women, when you say their number one need is affection, that means they want to be cherished. They want to be listened to and loved. Is that fair?
That's right. And conversation was in that thing. They want to have conversation with
mm-hmm.
you. So it isn't always the easiest, but men are very capable of doing that and having conversation. It just isn't the most natural thing that they think of when they're trying to deal with a problem or deal with some kind of stress of the day.
Mm-hmm. Is it fair that men need to know what the end game is, what the end result is? If you come home and tell your husband, I was in the car accident today, and you start processing everything that happened, first thing the man's going to want to know is, are you okay? Is everything okay? Everyone okay?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We always want to know what the end game is, what the end result is.
Well, and I think, too, because we're talking about how women have more of these emotional connections and verbal connections for language, and we just have more of a need to do that. And a lot of times what will happen, and my husband has said this, I've been married over 40 years, and he will say, I'm not really sure what it is you want from me. And even though we've been married that many years, so I've learned to be very specific with it. All I want here is for you to listen, or I do want you to think about what I'm saying and offer a suggestion, or there is an action point at the end of this that would be helpful. And when I do that, it really makes that conversation go a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm. Does he feel like he's on eggshells, though, when you say that?
No, and I think it's very helpful. He just says, you know, just because we think differently. And again, we've been married for a long time, so we know each other very well. And I'm still surprised at how I think he's going to go a certain direction and he doesn't. So it's not that he isn't as smart or any of those kind of things. It's just that the way my brain works, I'm already, you know, I'm already going through all these conversational things, where I want to go, how I want to do this, processing. And he's kind of, like you said, he's kind of going to the point, the end game. And that's because that's what his brain does naturally. So if you talk about it and you understand this about each other, and over the years, you can accommodate each other and begin to, you know, listen more. And then maybe I don't have to use so many words when I'm trying to make a point and get right to the point, which is easier sometimes for him as well. So you just have to understand that you approach these things differently. And one is not better than the other. One is not right or wrong.
Linda, do men have a tendency of listening more defensively?
Well, again, I think they get a little overwhelmed by all the words.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and so you're always trying to think, okay, what's the, like you said, what's the point here? So when you're doing that and you're listening to somebody and you're trying to figure out what the point is, you're really not listening because you're preparing for what you really want to say back to make sure that you're getting what's going on. So I do think it is, again, that whole business of just sitting there trying to sit back, listen to what's going on, and even asking your partner, you know, okay, this is, you told me all of this stuff. Now, what is it you actually want from me at this point? Is it just to be a good listener? Because, hey, I'm there. I'm doing it. And I do have to tell men in couples therapy a lot, resist always trying to give a solution and make it better, because that's not always what the person wants.
Mm-hmm. I think men and are oftentimes afraid of upsetting their partners, so they're going to be possibly reluctant to ruffle the feathers.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a really good example. When I was in my first job, or not was my first job, it was when I was in my residency, and I was working at a VA hospital in the inpatient, locked, homicidal, suicidal, and psychotic ward. Okay, so
that's
it was
where
a really...
I met you. I was trying to figure out the first time I met you.
There we go. That's how we know
now
each other.
Now I remember.
You
oh, yeah.
Familiar.
Now it's all coming back to me.
Yeah, that was a very intense job. I mean, it was a great job. I loved the veterans who were in there, and, you know, a lot of trauma from wars and different things. But it was a very intense job. So I would come home. We were kind of newly married at that point. I would come home, and I would just go, oh, my gosh. And I would sort of spill out my day for almost a half an hour, an hour. And I know my husband, who is in the media field, who really wasn't dealing with, although maybe psychotic executives, but he wasn't dealing with the same type of people, didn't really have a full understanding of what I was doing. It was a bit overwhelming to him. And he finally looked at me one night and he said, you know what, I really want to hear what you have to say, and I want to really understand your world, and I know you want to understand mine because you ask me a lot of questions all the time. He said, but let's limit this to 10 minutes a day, and then let's move on to couples issues and things that are in the evening that we can do, to some of those recreational needs that we talked about, and doing things together and talking with each other about other things. And that was a really good principle early on in my marriage that really helped me understand that I needed to contain a little bit and he needed to, you know, ask a few more questions. But we figured it out, and we figured out a balance, and we understood what was important to each other. So that was a good way to deal with it, I think.
Yeah, Linda, we just have 30 seconds left. What's one smart thing a guy can do when he goes home tonight?
I think, again, just give that attention and that affection to your wife, and look at her with loving arms. Say something that's really affectionate to her. It'll make the rest of the evening go really well.
That's great advice, Dr. Linda Minter.
All right.
Thank you so much. As always, great to talk to you. Have a great week.
You too.
Thanks. It's 25 Thanks. Minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back. It's 30 minutes after the hour. Good morning, Bill Arnold here. We're getting awfully close to confirming a Supreme Court justice. We're going to talk to Dr. Richard Land in just a few minutes. Be back in a minute. When we live authentically, we live in freedom. Here's counselor and author Todd Mulliken.
The other thing I have people do is maybe ahead of time. You know, you're really going in a tough situation.
just be prayerful. I always say, you know, bring the spirit of truth into that. Bring the Holy Spirit into your, what I call your mail room, and just sort out your mail. I mean, what messages are coming in? You know, is it, I'm just so worried, I'm so fearful of the reaction of the other person. Then we got to say, I can't control the reaction. That's up to them and God. But I can control the fact that I need to be authentic. I need to be authentic about saying, hey, we had a great day with the kids. Thanks for your help today. It was wonderful. Or, you know what? I was really hurt when this happened today. Just living authentically really frees up the codependent over time, not overnight.
You can find that full interview on our website at myfaithradio.com. Next up, we're going to talk to Dr. Richard Land about the appointment of Neil Gorsuch. You're not going to want to miss this. Be back in a minute.
It's all too easy for parents to get sidetracked right when their child needs them the most. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. During my high school years, I don't remember engaging much with my parents. But families should be spending more time together as they get older, not less. Unfortunately, the teen years are when things get busy with school and extracurricular activities and when parents hit the peak of their demanding careers. Are you checking out your child's life in a critical moment? Well, today, spend some quality time together. Insist on taking your teen out for breakfast or lunch and make it a habit. And when you do, it tells him you were worth spending time with, and I will always pursue you no matter what.
More from Mark Gregston at ParentingTodaysTeens.org. While you're there, look for helpful resources specifically designed for moms and dads. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
All right, it's 37 minutes after the hour. You now know what's on my mind today, and I have a feeling it's also on the mind of my guest, Dr. Richard Land.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know you're a baseball fan, and today's the big home opener day. So,
I am a big baseball fan.
I know
I played in college.
Awesome. What position were you?
And I was a pitcher and a first baseman. So, I'm always, the one thing I love about spring training is everybody's got a shot at the World Series. opening day, hope springs eternal.
Yeah, and by the end of the day, the Twins will be mathematically eliminated. That's just a painful reality.
My hometown team, the Houston Astros, they've been to the World Series once in their history, and they got swept by the Chicago White Sox. So, but this year, the New York Times says they may win. They may play the Cubs in the World Series. So
that's
we'll
awesome.
See.
So, as a pitcher, Dr. Land, what was your best pitch?
Oh, I was a fastball pitcher. Left-handed fastball pitcher, and my two heroes were Sandy Koufax and Ted Williams, which tells you a little bit of what kind of pitcher I was and what kind of hitter I was.
Yeah.
I was a pull hitter.
Yeah. But the left-handed fastball throwers were they're very hard to hit.
Well, I was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I had let you brag about your baseball career all morning, but I want to get to Neil Gorsuch too.
Well, Neil Gorsuch is a much better judge than I was a baseball player.
All right, now the committee vote is expected today, and the full Senate vote is coming up maybe as early as this Friday. Is that correct?
Well, according to Senator McConnell, he says that Judge Gorsuch will be confirmed this week.
Okay.
So that means they got to vote on Friday.
Uh-huh. So you say that by any standard that should matter, Judge Neil Gorsuch should be confirmed as the Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. Okay, let's talk about the standards that matter.
Well, first of all, he's a very, very brilliant jurist, and you certainly want people who are bright and who know how to do what Supreme Court justices are supposed to do. And he's issued hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of opinions, and many of them were unanimous, and I think he's only been overturned about 1% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
He is a strict constructionist, original intent jurist. He believes that you should interpret the Constitution. You should not try to read into the Constitution your own views. He says a judge who is always happy with his decisions is not a good judge, because sometimes he's going to rule against his own personal views in favor of what the law says. And that's what we desperately need in our federal court system, from the Supreme Court all the way down to district judges. We've seen recently in the rulings against President Trump's immigration extreme vetting that we have federal court judges who don't care or don't know what the Constitution says and just make up rulings out of whole cloth to fit their personal opinions. If you want the prime example of that, just go to the judge in Hawaii who just ignored the Constitution in making his decision. So I think that I'm happy that Mr. Gorsuch is a person who is a follower of Christ. I'm happy that Mr. Gorsuch is someone who is pro-life and who has studied natural law at Oxford and believes in the underpinnings of natural law for rights that are the same underpinnings we have in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution. But that should be irrelevant to what a judge does. A judge's personal views should be irrelevant to how he rules. He should rule based upon what the law says. As Chief Justice Roberts says when he was being confirmed, and Chuck Schumer said, I just want to know, are you going to be for the little guy or are you going to be for the big guy? And Judge Roberts said, I'm for the Constitution. My client's the Constitution. If the Constitution says the big guy wins, then I will be for the big guy. If the Constitution says the little guy wins, then I'm going to rule for the little guy. Mm. Well, that's exactly what a judge is supposed to do. If the senators don't like what the Constitution says, there is a process to amend it. But until they amend it, we have the rule of law, not the whims and the opinions of justices.
Mm-hmm. That is a land fastball right there. So let me ask you this. The number of the judges right now in the Supreme Court, how many are doing what you just described as the standard?
Well, three of them do it all the time.
Okay. That'd be Thomas.
Thomas and Roberts and, Alito.
Alito, yes.
And one does it some of the time, Kennedy.
Okay. All right. So let's...
Except when it comes to gay rights issues.
Okay.
Then he completely abandons the Constitution and follows his own personal views.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Land, why do you think there's so much division on Judge Gorsuch?
Well, because as former President Obama reminded us, elections have consequences. And the consequence of this election, one of the big ones, one of the most lasting ones, ones that could last for 40 years, because Judge Gorsuch is 49 years old. He's the youngest justice, the youngest person to be put up for the Supreme Court in quite a while, is that this will shift the court back to where it was prior to Justice Scalia's death. And Judge Gorsuch will be there probably for 35 or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that the liberals do, that they can never get their full agenda through by legislation. They have to do it by executive order, and they have to do it by Supreme Court judicial imperial decrees because the American people don't want it. Mr. Obama pushed the envelope so far that one of the most wise things I've heard about the last election, on the morning of the inauguration, as President Obama's helicopter was lifting off to leave town, Britt Hume of Fox News said, "Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of things written, a lot of things said about what President Obama's legacy is. It can really be described in two words: Donald Trump."
Mm.
Without Barack Obama, there would be no Donald Trump. Barack Obama pushed the envelope so far beyond where the majority of Americans wanted to go that the snapback was President Trump.
And is that kind of like the way the Jimmy Carter administration got us Ronald Reagan?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Kind of a similar snapback.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how Lyndon Johnson got us Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, more with Dr. Richard Land as we continue our conversation about the confirmation of Judge Neil Gorsuch. Be back in a minute. It's 47 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to left-handed fastballer Dr. Richard Land. His life hasn't gone down hill completely since then, since college, since playing baseball. But he is president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. We're talking about the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch, and he is a great defender of religious freedom. What can we expect from him as far as protecting religious liberty?
Well, I think it's pretty clear from his record that he's going to interpret the First Amendment the way it was written, which is that Congress is not supposed to get into the religion business, and the government is not to interfere with the free exercise of religion. All the restrictions in the First Amendment are on the government, not on people of faith. It's freedom for religion, not freedom from religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very important prepositional difference.
Now, he has been involved with several cases involving religious liberty. Can you name a few?
I can't think of any particular ones right now, but he's consistently ruled.
Okay.
In his whole record, he's ruled that religious freedom is inviolate, that you cannot trample the consciences of people, and the government is not to be weaponized against its own people.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about the interpretation of the Constitution, that is the key. That this is what we love about him so much as a strict constructionist. So what do you think is going to be the biggest obstacle between now and Friday? Do you think there'll be a filibuster?
Well, I don't know. Another senator, a Democratic senator, has come out today and said he's going to vote for Judge Gorsuch, the senator from Indiana. So that makes three. So you're up to 55. He needs five more Democrats to say they're going to vote for him to stop a filibuster. Any one senator can declare a filibuster, and then you've got to have 60 votes to break the filibuster. Now, no Supreme Court justice has ever been successfully filibustered with a partisan filibuster. In other words, only one party.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. And in fact, there were almost no judges, federal judges, were filibustered ever at any level until the late 90s and in 2000 when George W. Bush came in. It was, interestingly enough, Chuck Schumer who started the process of saying that senators should seek to filibuster every federal court nominee of George W. Bush because he was so upset with the judges that President Bush was putting forward. To give you an example of how things have changed, when Justice Thomas was confirmed, as you know, that was probably one of the most controversial nomination processes in history. There was no filibuster, and Clarence Thomas was confirmed 52-48, well below filibuster numbers, but there was no filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that since the filibuster was brought in 1837 as a Senate rule, there was no use of the filibuster on the judiciary virtually at all until around 2000. It was one, Abe Fortas, but that he was already on the court and he was being nominated to be Supreme Court Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he had some really serious ethical issues with finances that derailed him and got a filibuster that was bipartisan,
mm-hmm.
with Republicans and Democrats. And so to say that the nuclear option would be breaking precedent, well, no. What broke precedent was the use of the filibuster for judicial nominations in the first place, and that hasn't happened until the 21st century. And Harry Reid did the so-called nuclear option for non-Supreme Court justices so they could stack the appeals courts starting in 2013, and they have done it. There was one appeals court of the 13 that had dominated liberals when Mr. Obama took office. And when President Obama left office, 9 of the 13 appeals courts now have liberal majorities.
Mm-hmm.
And so, all that Senator McConnell is saying, look, if you guys are going to try to change the rules, you can't just change the rules for Democrats. you know, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, and we're not gonna give Chuck Schumer make him co-president and give him veto power over who President Trump can nominate.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Landau, I look at some of the Democrats that are voting for Gorsuch, and some, like, for example, Claire McCaskill from Missouri, who obviously that state went big for Trump last fall, and she announced that she would support a filibuster and vote no for Gorsuch's confirmation. And then yet there is a recording of her in which she was really praising Gorsuch as one of the better judges on the president's list of picks. What do you make of some of the split-mindedness that's going on?
Well, when Judge Gorsuch was nominated for the appeals court, he was elected unanimously by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
He was confirmed unanimously to the appeals court. It shows the hyper-partisanship that has taken over in Washington, D.C., and it's something that all of us should be praying about as Christians, because it's very corrosive and it's very destructive, and it's really harmful. Hyper-partisanship, in my opinion, is the reason why the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare, was not repealed. That bill was not a good bill, but it was a lot better than Obamacare, and it was probably the best chance the Republicans are going to have of being able to defund Planned Parenthood, because part of that thing was defunding Planned Parenthood, and it only needed 51 votes to pass the Senate because of reconciliation rules, instead of the 60 votes it's going to need under any other kind of legislation. And the Freedom Caucus turned it down. And the Freedom Caucus is exercising a veto power over what the rest of the Republican Party and the Congress can do. And I think they made a grievous mistake. And then on the other side, you've got the Democrats being threatened by the left. The radical left saying, if any of you vote for Gorsuch, we're gonna run a primary opponent against you in the next election. And so you, instead of having a move toward a compromise in the center, you've got the hard left and the hard right dictating. And then you go back to the question of, you know, can the center hold? And if the center doesn't hold, if there's not some kind of compromise, some building of goodwill, then the government is going to be paralyzed at the legislative level by hyper-partisanship, and it's going to be extremely corrosive for the country at large.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm looking at the fireworks that are happening over Judge Gorsuch, which is really just going to be a replacement for Scalia. What are the fireworks going to be like for the next Supreme Court nomination?
Well, it depends on who it is. If it's a conservative, it'll be about like this. If it's a liberal, then it's going to be unprecedented. In fact, it's reported that the Democrats came to the Republicans and said, we will not filibuster Gorsuch if you promise us that you will not do away with the filibuster on the next nominee. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, they want to put a 60 vote requirement for the next nominee, because they assume that given the actuarial tables and the present state of the court, that the next person to go will probably be either Ginsburg or Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And either one of those, replaced by a conservative jurist, would tilt the balance of the court in a more conservative direction than it's been for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand what that can mean to their agenda. So far, the Republicans have turned it down. They should turn it down. If they don't turn it down, they, in effect, are making Chuck Schumer co-president. But the Republican Party has been known to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory before.
Mm-hmm. So we just have about 30 seconds left. Are the liberals mad that Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't step down, giving Obama a chance to appoint another Supreme Court justice?
No, I don't think so, because of what happened with Merrick Garland when Scalia died. But let me just say a word about that. The idea that a president should not be allowed to nominate a Supreme Court justice in the last year of his presidency, because the people are going to be able to vote on who they want to make that nomination, is called the Biden rule. And the reason it's called the Biden rule is that Joe Biden brought that rule in against President Bush.
Mm.
So the Republicans are just playing by the same. When they stopped Garland, they were just playing by the same playbook that Biden and Schumer argued for.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy of the Democrats on this issue is gargantuan, Herculean.
Yeah. Dr. Land, thanks so much. Have a happy baseball day.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. It's 57
all
minutes
right,
after 57 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Have a great day, everybody. Spring Share starts tomorrow. Bright and early at 6 a.m. Can hardly wait. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.